Gentlemen and gentle ladies, welcome to the first episode of Stranger Danger. I am really excited for this podcast series, and I hope you enjoy this season. This season, we talked to a bunch of really interesting people, some people that are complete strangers, some people that I've lost touch with, some people that I never thought I would talk to. So it's a really great series, and I hope you enjoy it. Please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes. It helps the show. Tell your friends, share with your friends, share with your family, share with your enemies, share with your not enemies. And please, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, please go to astrangerdanger.com/guestme. That's astrangerdanger.com/GUESTME. I think I spelled that right. Anyways, in this episode, in our first episode, I talked to a very interesting gentleman who contacted me on Craigslist. I did not think that I would chat with him, to be honest, because he lives in Washington, and I really wanted to meet with people in person. But as we started chatting over email, it seemed like it was a good fit, and I'm really glad I did. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to Brett. He was just a really interesting person who's had a very interesting life. And we FaceTimed so we could sort of see one another and talk at the same time. We had some technical difficulties, so sometimes I would ask him to repeat things because it cut out or whatever. But, you know, I really enjoyed talking with Brett, and I'm probably going to go on his podcast at some point. So I look forward to that. This is a longer intro. Usually there won't be this long, but I really hope you enjoy this episode and enjoy the season. So look forward to hearing your thoughts and feedback. All right, enjoy. So I was like, hi, I'm Gareth, and I wanted to have that sort of natural
Did I just throw you all off?
No, that's fine. We can keep all this in. I'm okay with that if you're okay with that.
Oh, man.
I want people to feel like it's like, oh, this is actually happening in real time. So
Yeah, that's cool.
So I'm fine with it. It's the nature of the world we're in, right? So
absolutely. Yeah. Pretty crazy, right? Be able to connect like this.
I know. It is. It's insane. Where are you located? Where do you live?
I'm in the greater Seattle area, in a town north of Everett called Marysville.
What's the name of the town, sorry?
Marysville, Washington.
Marysville, okay, great.
I think, and you said you're in Vancouver, BC, right?
Yeah, we're in Vancouver, so we're not that far apart.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's a town that my wife and I have been actually, it's on our list to do.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, we want to get up there and travel.
Oh, well, you have to come up and see the place. It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's a good town to be in, and lots of fun things to do, and lots of good eats, and pretty multicultural, and there's lots of good things.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, Seattle's very similar in the sense that it's multicultural. I love how diverse it is, and, you know, it doesn't matter what you're into, there's something for you. It seems like Canada, you guys kind of have your act together though, when it comes to manners, when it comes to, I don't know. I just, you know, our northern neighbors seem to just kind of have it together.
Yeah. I think there's some of that. I mean, there's definitely, we have our own issues and things that we need to deal with, but you know, it's part of every type of government system has its own sort of bonuses, and every culture has its bonuses and its negative sides. And right now our insurance rates are really high for car insurance, and cost of living is crazy in Vancouver. And
why does it seem like whenever I'm driving on the road, whenever I see a BC license plate, the cars just seem on average nicer than America? I don't get it, because you know, our prices are lower, our insurance is lower.
No, there's just lots of good money in Vancouver. So gotcha. There's a lot of people that move here that have the money and to live here. I mean, we actually, where we live is this town called Maple Ridge. It's 45 minutes outside of Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And that's because that's like where we could afford to buy. It's further outside of town.
That's what we are in Marysville. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, but the people that are in Vancouver, and luckily we bought like 8 years ago, we bought our place. But I mean, people that are in Vancouver are... like downtown or buying now all have a lot of money that sort of they've come with or they've had for years because they've got house equity and things like that. So I think a lot of that gets poured into vehicles and fun toys and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. So,
yeah.
Cool.
I like to ask some questions sort of right off the hop in terms of one of the things that I like to ask people, and you may or may not be prepared for it, but what do you think is people's biggest misconception about you as a person?
About me as a person? Yeah. Oh. Well, okay, so most people that know me from TV.
Okay.
My wife and I were on a reality series called 90 Day Fiancé.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever heard of the show?
My wife watches it a lot.
Sure.
Yeah. So, but I've heard about it and I've watched a few episodes with her. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so you know, so to answer your question, the common misconception people have about me is, I guess I would say that that I'm a pushover. You know, I didn't come off as real strong in that. It was like, you know, it was the battle between my mom and my wife, and I was stuck in the middle and.
Right.
You know, in reality, it's no, I'm very solid with my decisions. I know what's important in my life and I know what decisions I'm going to go and take. Right. So, yeah, so a lot of people when they meet me, they're just like, oh, you've got your act together. You know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, TV makes me sound like an idiot.
Sorry to interrupt you. What was...
I was just saying TV just makes me look like an idiot.
That's what I was going to ask. Is it an editing thing or was it just like a circumstantial thing, the moment that you're in? What do you think is a combination of both?
It is, I tell you, reality. So I can speak from a different perspective now that I've been through it, now that my wounds have healed. You know, I've licked my wounds. But when you're in the middle of it, when you don't know what you're getting into, you have no creative control. Right. And so they'll film scenes and their whole... Man, they're masters at their crafts. Yeah. They are going in there and they are going, they are filming for hours and hours and hours, and they are looking for those key moments, those you know, what is going to get the most emotion out of it.
Okay.
And yeah, so they have certain things. Like, for instance, in our season, they had a, the right off the bat, it was, a scene with roses, right? And they knew, they take notes, right?
Yeah.
And they knew that I had promised my wife that I would get her a dozen roses at the airport. Mm-hmm. And so what they had done is they said, hey, listen, we will get the flowers. Don't worry about that. We've got you covered. So they knew that they were going to get something different than roses. Me, thinking, oh, sweet, I'm getting some free flowers out of this, you know, I'm going for it. So then they tried to get my reaction, you know, as if I was going to blow up when I went to the flower shop. And, you know, and so I'm looking at the flowers and the producer said, but Brett, these aren't roses. And I'm like, I don't care. I didn't pay for them, you know. And so I'm real go with the flow.
Yeah.
My wife, on the other hand, had been flying from the Philippines. She went to Canada, BC, and then or Vancouver, and then to Seattle. Yeah. So she's exhausted. She's tired, and she wasn't saying it as an attack to me at all. But she said the first thing she noticed is, these aren't roses. Why did you get me these? And boom, that was the scene. That was the moment that the cameras wanted. And they knew it. And it was just, that was a hard thing to live down.
Yeah.
But you have to learn how to roll with that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And if you don't, you're going to get eaten alive, which is exactly what we let happen to us. And if I could go back, I'd kind of develop the thicker skin a lot quicker.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you guys are still together?
Yeah. Oh yeah, we're going on strong. We have a 1 year old little girl.
Awesome.
Yeah, she is the light of our day. Oh,
that's
man.
Awesome, man,
full of tenacity.
Yeah,
just crawling. I mean, you know, I remember in February she started crawling. And yeah, right before her first birthday in July, she starts walking. Well, now she's just smoking up and down the stairs.
That's awesome.
And even with baby gates. And so I told her, I'm like, all right. And just actually right before you called me,
yeah,
I had to run downstairs because she already is touching the knobs on the stove. And there was something on the stove and that was all smoking and... She is going to be a handful. She already is. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. It's interesting. I actually, we have a 1 year old. She's turning one in 2 weeks, or actually this weekend on the 4th of September.
Oh, congratulations.
So, yeah. So
is that your one
same...
and only?
Sorry, what was that?
Is that your one and only?
One and only, yeah.
So far.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's lots of fun. Like you said, light of my life. It's a lot of fun to see her learn and sort of explore and find out about the world and...
Yeah.
Try to turn things on and open things up that she shouldn't.
Yeah, and I think the other day we just, and briefly, I mean, I don't know much, but fill in the blanks. You said that you were from South Africa?
Yeah, yeah.
Born and raised in South Africa.
Yeah.
And your wife is Canadian?
Yeah, she's Canadian. Yeah.
You guys are basically in the same situation we're in.
Right, I know. Yeah, it's crazy. we dated for 7 months, so not 3 months like you guys. But
No. That's a misconception right there.
Oh, is it? Okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah. My wife and I, we met in January of 2013 online.
Yeah.
And we married September of 2014. So,
oh, awesome.
Yeah, the relationship.
Yeah, so you guys chatted for a while. You had some online connections.
Yep. Yep. I went down there. I think we both wanted to make sure that the other one wasn't scamming the other one. And,
right,
you know, she had been in a relationship with a dude from Puerto Rico and found out the guy was playing her like a fiddle. And so, you know, so she kind of came in real leery about it. And, you know, and me, I'd heard so many horror stories about people getting duped by, you know, a lot of women in the Philippines. So we had to make sure that we put ourselves in situations that were going to test the relationship.
Right, right. That's awesome, man. That's great. I think like that's the majority of how relationships are formed nowadays is through online, some sort of connection that happens first. And
I love it. Another thing, you said you were into technology.
Yeah.
And how cool is it going to be when we are able to have a podcast such as this? You throw on your virtual reality goggles. I throw on mine, and we're literally in the same room.
Same room. Yeah. That'd be great. Yeah, I think the world is getting smaller and smaller, and so as much as these like cultural relationships that build over continents seem odd or maybe a little bit out of the norm, they're probably going to become more and more common, I think, because the connection factor there is just so much more accessible. Like you just have ability to connect with people.
That's what's kind of throwing me off about this wall that our president wants to build between us and Mexico. I'm not against stronger immigration policies and laws or just enforcing the ones that we already have. I think that, you know, but the immigration situation we're facing in our country is not one side or the other. It's both. Mm-hmm. It's everybody exploiting the situation. And and it was a situation where people on both sides of the aisle didn't matter what it was.
Yeah.
People were hiring cheap labor and when so many people are benefiting from that, it's just an issue that continually gets swept under the rug until one party wants to make it their hot button issue.
Right. Yeah. It's really interesting sort of seeing it from the outside from this perspective here. And I think that there probably is some of that. It's not quite as overt as it is down in the States, but there's definitely, you know, situations where people, Canadians maybe aren't quite, like I said, overtly, have that racism or with them, but we do embrace diversity and culture, and which is it's a good thing. I mean, any company or any country that has diversity really can succeed and do well.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So
yeah, I mean, you know, I grew up in a city in Montana, Kalispell, Montana, town of 30,000 people. Yeah. And predominantly white. I mean, if you look at the census, I think it says it's 96% white. So you could totally go snowblind just by seeing white people, you know. And and I remember it was crazy because, you know, even though I grew up there, my family moved around a lot growing up. And so I'd lived in, you know, just all different parts of the state. So I kind of came in as this out-of-stater. And when we moved in, we got this... People looked at us as the outsiders. They didn't really like seeing people from the outside coming in. And and as I grew up through high school, I had some African American friends, and I would ask them, you know, do you feel like racism? Do you feel that when you go into a place? And it was, yes, 100% of the time. They would go into a mall and they would be followed. And so that was the first time that I really felt that, man, I've got to get out there and see what this world is like, because this is, you know, it's driving too much fear. And I think that when we break down these barriers of borders and of cultures and, you know, and we start to get to know our neighbors, it just opens so many doors and so many opportunities, and
for sure
I like it. I love it.
And I think that's part of the reason why I wanted to do this. I think that we have this fear of strangers that isn't, that's why it's called Stranger Danger.
Thanks.
Yeah, I think it's pretty catchy. But I think we have this fear of strangers that isn't necessarily true. Like, that's why I want to reach out with people. And people, even in telling my friends about this podcast, they were like, wait, you're just going to go meet some stranger in a mall and talk to them for an hour or however long? I'm like, yeah. Like, if I was a single, like, lady, maybe not. Like, maybe that would be a little bit tougher to sell. Like, I'm a big guy. I'm
6'2". Oh, yeah. Know? Yeah, there you
so
go.
I'd be don't scared really, of you. Sorry, what was that?
I said, I'd be scared of you.
So I don't really have a lot of fear in doing that. The only fear I really have is that, yeah, maybe some guys gang up on me or something. But the 99% of the time, the interactions you have with people are fine. They're good.
Yep.
Even chatting with you has been great so far. It seemed like a genuinely nice guy. Like, I just think the chances of something going wrong are pretty slim. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the optimist in me, but I don't know.
I think that, you know, the chances of something bad happening, for instance, I run a podcast. And I have two different podcasts, and one is where it's based on immigration, K-1 visa related type stuff that kind of relates to how people know me from the show. The other one, I call it the Tip Touch podcast, and that's where that's kind of my pet project, where I just get to explore, and I get to very much like you. Talk to, it could be a stranger, it could be someone I am very, very familiar with, doesn't matter, but we're going to go into some depths, and we're going to go kind of deep into some areas where we might not be anywhere, you know, like out in public, you know. It's like, we're going to talk about some personal stuff, and we're going to open up. But I've thought about, you know, like, one thing I thought about is talking to some homeless people. We have a situation, a huge drug epidemic down here. And one thing I've thought about, I've kind of flirted with the idea, is sitting down with someone, you know, buying someone lunch, you know, a homeless person lunch that you can just visibly see is dealing with some drugs, and helping people understand what is this life, this day-to-day life. 'Cause all we see is the headlines. All we see are these, hey, you know, mother gets her children taken away from her, or someone found, and it's, there's not enough to the story, and there's not enough people reaching out.
Right.
And anyway, so that's kind of, but I would never bring someone like that. That would be stranger danger for me. I would not bring someone that like that to my home. Right. You know, that's where I would go out and explore.
Yeah. And I think that's you know, that's part of the reason why obviously I'm doing it remotely. And it is a challenge. Like the gentleman I just interviewed recently, we sat outside of Starbucks and we chatted for an hour, and he deals with schizophrenia, and I just chatted with him, and he talked about his mental illness, and he talked about some of the misconceptions that people have about him. And I just think, you know, these are the people that we need to hear from.
Man.
These are the people that have got great stories that don't get a platform.
Dude, that's amazing. Good for you for going out there and doing that service. I mean, because that is a service to the world and your community.
Yeah. And I hope it expands. And I think that there's more. I just want to give people more sort of courage to reach out and do things like that. So it's a lot of fun. And I like that I don't have an agenda either. It's just like, let's just chat. We can talk through some things. I've got like questions that I ask people. But if we just hit it off and we're chatting normally, then let's do that.
Oh, isn't that awesome when a relationship or a relationship, when a conversation just goes so smoothly, you know, it's just this natural, like, oh man, we're friends, you know, it's just easy. I like that.
I mean, I don't know how long we've been chatting for, but I think I've asked you one question.
yeah. We've been about 20 minutes. I'm out.
Yeah. Which is great. Like, it's fun to just chat and make our way through things.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. One of the other questions I ask is, like, what makes you unique? Which I know is sort of a cliched question, but I like to hear that perspective from people. What makes them unique?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that the situation that, you know, I grew up, I mean, you know, that story where we had no money, I had a single mom, never met my father. And somehow, some way, I've just been able to fight through it all. And man, I have the perfect life. This is the life that I've always strived for. A stable wife, two beautiful daughters, an awesome career, and then awesome, like I have these hobbies to boot. You know, I have a couple of podcasts, you know, meeting people and all that. So, you know, the thing that makes me unique is that I've been able to, you know, deal with, like, coming up from that environment where I was in a foster home for 6 months, went through, endured child abuse. I mean, the whole nine yards, and rejection. I mean, all I knew through my whole life was rejection, and then somehow, some way, being able to overcome all that stuff. And, you know, having friends. I mean, dude, I've had friends that were drug dealers. I've had friends that have died from heroin. And it was just like, it was a hard road to toe, but I just plugged through.
Wow. That's interesting. How do you think, like, being fostered and experiencing some child abuse, how does that shape you as a parent now? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. Oh man. So, you know, there are some certain things. I've had a lot of counseling, so luckily, I've been able to kind of process and work through some of my most sensitive issues. But one was I told myself when I was 25, when I had my first daughter, and, you know, at that time I was partying. I was, you know, I was so careless. I was so reckless. But the moment that I held her, even though I knew that her mom and I were not going to be together, we just knew it because we were two different people, but we had our daughter, and the moment that I held my daughter, I said, everything's going to change. And I just always swore that I would never hit my daughter, that I would always figure out a way to discipline her without hitting her.
Yeah.
And, but there was this one time when she was three that I gave her a swat right on the butt because she had hit a dog with a flashlight, and it wasn't like an abusive hit. It wasn't one of those things where I lost my temper. It was that this is the right thing to do. Right. And you know, and she didn't cry from the SWAT. She cried because I put her in the room and I made her think about it for 15 minutes. But we talked about it. We talked about compassion, that the fact that this animal has feelings just like you. And, you know, you would cry if a dog came up and hit you, you know. Yeah. And so we had a moment. But during that 15 minutes when she was in the room, I had to I got anxiety through that because I'm just like, oh, I don't want to do this wrong. And it was just very hard. It was very hard. But the fact that I've only had to do that one in 10 years, oh, it's been a beautiful thing. But I don't hit. I just don't believe in hitting your children at all.
No. And, Yeah. It's interesting because growing up in South Africa, like obviously parents there, like I grew up, and I don't know what it was like for you growing up in the States, but in South Africa, you grew up getting spanked. Like it just was part of it. When I went to school, if I was late, I would get a spanking from the teacher. Like you're getting spankings from everybody.
Do you think that was effective though?
You know what? I don't know. I mean, I look at myself now and I think maybe I'm a pretty compassionate person. I don't use violence. So maybe it affected me in that way because I can empathize with people. Uh-huh. But I would never like vouch for it or say that it's a strategy that we should take as parents. I just don't, I don't see the value in it. I think there's other ways you can get the results without needing to do that.
Yeah.
And I know it's a bit of a hot button topic, but I just think there's other ways to get around it.
Well, yeah. And I think that, I think that there are situations that definitely call for a swat on the butt. I mean, my daughter had that example where she hit if you're going to, anyways, I know everybody has their own ways of parenting.
Yeah.
But there is, and I don't even think it's a fine line. I think it's black and white. There's a difference between abuse and discipline. Yes. And, you know when you're abusing your child.
Yeah. I mean, I think about the times where I've accidentally, like, hurt my daughter. When one time I was putting her up in her jolly jumper. Uh-huh. And for some reason the chain, like, came off when I was tilting it. And so she fell down. And I just, in that moment, the heartache that I felt, I was like, this is the worst thing that's happened. I just felt so terrible. I couldn't imagine, like, intentionally doing that.
Oh.
Or, like, intentionally hurting her.
That's the thing. I had to ask myself that. That's a question I still don't know to this day, is how my parents were able to do the things that they did to me. Because I just couldn't, like, I don't know. It was a weird thing. It was a weird thing to think about.
Yeah. Well, that's really, I mean, so you, it's obviously shaped you into the person you are, and it's changed you, and it sounds like it's changed you into being a great parent and a great father.
It could have went either way, man. It could have, like, I have people that I've lived parallel lives with that have been through just as tough of a road as me. And, you know, they're in and out of jail. They are, you know, in the drug scene, different, multiple children from multiple women. I mean, you know. Like I said, and I've had, you know, like I said, a friend that had died from a heroin overdose. So, you know, I've seen it go both ways. And it just, I think it's an internal decision. But I also feel like I was very, very fortunate from a young age. I had people that cared about me. And I think that if there's anything to walk away with, it's that, you know, if people see someone in need and... Man, we've got to look out for our kids. Our kids are our futures. Mm-hmm. And I don't, you know, it's just, I had really good school counselors. I had, and that went above and beyond. I'm talking not just like me just going to the counselor's office. I'm talking like I had one counselor that bought me a basketball. I had another one, well, the same one. She actually convinced my mom to let me stay the night at her house, which these days you would never see that because it just wouldn't be allowed, right? It's just ripe for it's ripe to go wrong, right?
Yeah.
But that was the type of compassion that I had in my life. I had these amazing people in my life. So that's what it took, is just people that were compassionate, took me under their wing, and it even went into my career, where I would have really good mentors that just saw that I was, you know, willing to work hard and learn and, you know, so I think that's what it takes.
Yeah. Because in earlier in that, you were saying that there's like some, maybe it's a bit of an internal decision, but I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said it was like the people around you.
Yeah.
The support that you had, like even chatting with this gentleman yesterday or on Tuesday, he was with schizophrenia. I said, like, what do you think helped you? And he said, I have the support of my family. I have the support of counselors. I have like a center I can go to and sort of play music and be around healthy coping mechanisms. And I think that like that is, if you spoke to most people that have got through something like that or struggled with something, that's the defining sort of line to me, is the support system that's there. And some people don't reach out and they sort of isolate, and then they do go maybe the other way.
Yeah, and I think that America in specific, I think that the trend that we're showing, we are seeing suicide climbing at an astronomical rate. And I think that it has a lot to do with that. I think it has a lot to do with people don't know who to turn to when times get hard. And, you know, one thing that I always try to do for my friends is that I always let them know. I don't care how cheesy it sounds. Like, if you're having a hard time, you come talk to me. I have resources. I have tools at my disposal. Like, I know how to help in those situations. I know what numbers to call. I know what I can do.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it's just, it's being there. A lot of people just need someone to talk to. And and how funny is it that people, with the advent of social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and yet so many people can feel so alone and alone to the point that they're willing to just off themselves.
It's sad that and I wonder if, we were talking earlier about VR, I wonder if that will change the connection factor. Like, this is connection for sure, but I wonder if that's going to add another dimension that will maybe help people feel more connected. Just because you physically or you mentally feel like you're there in the room with the person.
Oh yeah. I mean, imagine that. Like, let's take your friend that you were talking to, struggling with schizophrenia. How cool would it be if all of a sudden, hey, you know, we may not have someone in Vancouver for you to talk to, but someone in San Francisco is actually gripping the same issues that you're dealing with, and then they get to VR and they get to trade stories, and you know, how awesome would that be? And you get to see the empathy and the compassion in your you know, the person you're talking to, in their eyes, and, you know, I don't know. I really want to see that.
Yeah, I think it would be great. I think it's going to help. A lot of people are scared of it, but I think it's going to be for the good.
Yeah, well, you know, people were scared of cars when cars started, you know? And look at that. We can't go a day without our cars.
I know. Yeah, people are scared of the internet too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
One of the other questions I asked you about misconceptions about yourself. What do you think people's most accurate understanding of who you are is? Like, what would you say people are, like, they really understand that that's true of yourself?
Well, you know, I used to read through all the comments, you know, whatever everybody would say about me, and if I could go back, I would not do it, right? But one common thread I used to see is that people did see that I was a compassionate person, that I just wore my heart on my sleeve. You know, perhaps, nah, I don't want to say to a fault, because I know I have my boundaries pretty good. But yeah, I have no problem letting people know that I'm a compassionate person, because I feel like that's one thing we're lacking. And I feel like if we're going to have leaders, we need that example. People need to have that example to follow, and I have no problem showing compassion toward people.
Yeah.
So I think I've honed in on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I think to me, it's like, what do you lose by being compassionate? Really, it's a win-win for everyone. You feel good about yourself. People feel they're supported. I don't understand.
Well, I think the reason why is because it almost can be. I mean, people tried to use it against me as misconstrued as weakness, and so, you know, nobody wants to be weak, especially if you're someone who's already insecure about yourself, and so, you know, then it becomes this competition about who can be the strongest, and you know, but when it comes down to it, man, you know, you look at some of the strongest people. I'm trying to think of an example, like The Rock, right? Dwayne Johnson, one of the strongest people, but man, he's just got a heart of gold. Just one really awesome dude to follow, you know?
And
no one's going to push him in a bar fight.
Yeah, and he's just doing so well, social media, well, everything. He's the biggest star on the planet. And
salt it's because of the earth, of his dude.
Authenticity, yeah.
Yeah. And
compassion.
Yep.
Yeah.
100%.
Can you tell me about the biggest pivot point in your life? Like, how were you, like, you, there was maybe a point, and maybe there might be a couple, but when you were like, oh, this thing happened, and after that happened, I wasn't the same.
Yeah. Well, I told you earlier about having my baby and how
that changed
everything. But the one that changed, like, my whole life direction was getting a divorce. When I was married for the first time, I had gotten divorced, and I felt so humiliated at that time. You know, it was just one of those things. I won't go into details about the whole thing, but what had happened was I said, man, everybody in this small town knows me as married to her, but now, you know, she's moved on. And now, you know, and now I'm going to be alone. And it was just really hard for me to deal with. I mean, I promised myself that even though I knew that I wasn't going to be with her, it was still hard when it was actually in my face. And so I just, man, that's when I decided that it's either now or never. And I decided that I was going to move to the Seattle area, move to the city, get to know what it was going to be, you know, get to take that risk. And when I did that, that's when all these other things started happening. That's when I decided that I was going to travel. So I ended up meeting my new wife out of that. And then we end up going on TV and appearing on TV. And then now I'm starting this podcast, and then we're having kids. So it was like taking that risk to, you know, at this weakest moment in my life. I mean, I lost half of my income just by moving out of that town and taking a job, and just overnight. And I lost everything. I lost everything. Going through that divorce, I lost all my money. My credit went to crap, and I lost everything, and I had to start all over. But I used that opportunity to redefine what my life was going to be like.
That must have been a really tough decision to make.
I was scared because, you know, you're a father now. You have all these responsibilities, and everything is telling you to just stay there, figure it out, maintain stability. But I don't know. There was just this thing inside of me that just pushed me and said, Brett, it's either now or never. If you're going to go, you have to go now, because if you stay here, you'll never go. So I just took advantage of my weakness there.
Wow. Do you think that's affected? I mean, you don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, but do you think it's affected your daughter at all? Or does she ask questions about it? Or how does that play out?
Well, she was a year and a half when I moved. And it was very hard. I know that it was hard for us, and that was actually, I had a lot of, I actually almost moved back. I took a job. I actually took a job back in Montana, and then at the very last minute decided, no, I can't move back. So I actually, I went to the job interview, they hired me, and I was getting ready to put my notice in for, at my current employer in Washington, but I just, I couldn't do it. I just said, no, stick with your dream. But my daughter and I, my 10-year-old, we have an awesome, awesome relationship. Mm-hmm. And we, the, again, you know, you talk about technology, we FaceTime multiple times a week, and we just spend hours just talking on the phone. She'll read to me, and you know, so we've been through it. She totally understands that this is the best thing for us.
Wow.
Of course, that's always wants me to move to Montana. She always, it's always a thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can see the attraction there if you've been a city kid, and So the other question, what makes you the happiest? What really brings you joy?
Without any time to think and without question, it's just, it's being at home with my family.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, growing up with no father and, you know, foster care and all that stuff and, you know, a very distant mother. I had no family. I had, you know, I had two half brothers that lived in another home, and I just had nothing. I had no family. I didn't have friends. And so now having a family that I come home to every day, and they're always so happy to see me. They're always just beaming. That brings so much happiness in my life.
That's a beautiful thing, man. That's great. I love hearing that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
What do you, I think we've sort of touched on this, but what do you wish that we collectively as a group of people, we could do better? Like, I'm not necessarily talking about country-wise, but just as the human race.
Yeah. Listen to each other, you know? Mm. We live in a time, especially, I don't know what it's like in Canada. It looks, like I said, it looks like you guys kind of have your act together a lot better than us. Right now, we are in a very polarized time in the States, and you know, you have your Democrats and your Republicans, and it feels like the people feel like we have to choose one or the other, like as if those are the only options.
I think I lost you, Brett, if you're still there.
I'm gonna call. We lost the call, so we're trying to call back.
All right.
Hey.
We lost you there for a second. So we'll just carry on and we can cut it together.
Yeah.
So I think I just heard like the people, we need to listen to one another. You feel like in the States there's you have to choose a side.
Yeah. We have to choose sides as if that's our only option. And I don't agree with that at all. I feel like if we could open our minds, you know, in school, I wish we taught critical thinking. I wish that was a subject that we would reintroduce to our classrooms, because it would explore different options. Like, oh, maybe there is an option C, D, and E, rather than just A and B.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I think that like I said, you know, when I met my wife, she didn't know anything about politics. It's just we get to talk about just common sense issues, things that make sense to us, and we just make decisions based on that, having nothing to do with what political party that is in charge or whatever headlines are in the papers. I just feel like we are allowing the media to sensationalize, you know, all their headlines, the news or whatever, but it's forcing us, or it's strongly encourages us to take these strong, strong stances that don't need to be so strong. So, you know?
Yeah, I think, like, when we look at it from the Canadian perspective anyways, I felt like I didn't even know there was other political parties in the States for a little while.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I thought it was like, oh, it's either Republican or Democrat. Like, that's the only way. And it feels like you have to, like you were saying, sort of pick a team. But it's interesting that you know, your wife, who's from another country, brings in a different perspective and goes and, like, sort of opens up that for you in some ways, it seems like.
Yeah, she comes from a country where martial law was in effect for years, you know? Yeah, and so they have that perspective to look at.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
And in Canada, in some ways, it's a little bit like that. It's sort of like, oh, you know, either vote Conservative or whatever. I forget the other party now. I don't even know. But I voted in the middle because I was like, I don't feel the need to vote for one particularly strong party. But then you have all these things like, oh, well, you're just wasting your vote if you do that. And it's like, well, I don't really see it that way. I see it more as I'm just not giving my vote to the two that people think are going to win.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, so we had, you know, some like a Libertarian Party. Who else? There was a Green Party, you know, and people, oh, they, you know, that was like an open assault if you voted for anyone but Hillary or Trump. And it was well, wait a minute, what about voting for my conscience? I mean,
yeah, that's the other one we have, liberal, conservative, liberal. We also have a Green Party here. Oh. But yeah, I think it's just, I don't know. It seems to me that like a lot of it too is built into your identity in the States. It's like, oh, I am a Republican or I am a Democrat, and that's who, like, that's how you identify yourself.
Yeah.
And I don't see that as much up here. I think it's more sort of, people don't draw lines that way. It's more sort of, it's your own business as to what sort of party you vote for. But that again is just perspective.
I feel like it used to
be
like that here.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, well, like what I love about living in the Seattle area, Seattle is extremely liberal, you know, and coming from Montana was extremely conservative. So the cool thing about that is because I'd moved around previously, I was exposed. I lived in Denver, Colorado, Des Moines, Iowa, Lewiston, Idaho, you know, and, California, Anaheim, California. So I've lived in these different areas and I got all these different approaches. And so I would always, like, even though I grew up mostly conservative, I mean, my mom, she was mostly like a hippie. I mean, she was kind of like willy-nilly. She would go in any, you know, wherever the wind blew, that's where she would go. And so there was no, I wasn't raised in politics at all. And so I think that with this open forum of just do whatever you want, go with however you feel, I needed structure. So that's where I tended to go toward more conservative leanings.
Yeah.
However, when I moved to Seattle, I noticed a lot of things, you know, liberal beliefs that really I said, oh, this makes sense. I like this and I like this. And, you know, so you get to pick and choose what you like. And and I refuse to be boxed in by any type of Brett, you're this, Brett, you're this. I hate labels. I think that one thing we do, and I think you're touching on that, is we are okay with labeling ourselves, just like we want the labels to be seen by the clothes we wear and by the cars we drive. And, you know, we want to label ourselves. We want to, you know, this self-identity. We want everybody to see us.
Yeah.
And everybody's afraid to be alone, though. Everybody's afraid to be independent.
Yeah, it's true. I think people want to be a part of a team. They want to be like, this is just the side I'm on. And if you don't pick a side, then you're seen as, like, you know, not a team player or whatever.
You're just a contrarian, you know?
You're contrarian, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, no, I see good in both sides. I also see bad in both sides. And Yeah. So what do you think we're here on Earth for? What do you think? Is this all just a...
You know, we humans are in this constant state of evolution. Yeah. And you can see that our DNA, the stuff that gets passed on through our DNA, it's just we're getting smarter. We're, yeah. Dude, I think, honestly, we're on Earth to get away from Earth. Yeah, I really think I like that we are eventually going to work ourselves onto some Star Trek type stuff, you know, and Star Wars for the people that like Star Wars. I don't want to polarize the podcast.
And I think Elon Musk is our leader to get us there.
I really do. I mean, you know, until he started kind of going cuckoo on Twitter, and I think he's just working too many hours. But I really admired where he was taking us with SpaceX. I mean, you know, basically just raising the bar, showing NASA.
Yeah.
And I don't know, Russia, I don't know what their company is, if there is a company, but showing these guys that, hey, we can make this stuff reusable. We don't have to, you know, just throw this stuff away. Yeah. And then also showing the automotive industry that, hey, we don't have to rely on foreign oil. You know, we can do this ourselves.
He is a one in a billion type of person. There's not there's no one really like him on Earth.
Oh, he's from South Africa, isn't he?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, man, I'm surprised you don't have his little figure.
In the background.
Yeah.
An Elon Musk action figure.
Yeah, so I'm sure you think highly of him then.
Yeah, I do. I think I'm like that. I'm a little bit of a contrarian. I love people that break the mold and look at something and aren't afraid to deconstruct it for the sake of deconstructing it. And even if you land up at the same point when you're done, at least you thought through the process. I just think that it's helpful. It's a healthy exercise to do. And he's prepared to do that with everything.
Oh,
and
he's
got the brains to do it.
That's the thing. I mean, people like him, you know, I am so amazed. I'm floored. In fact, I'm a little bit, I get scared to even think about the stuff that the knowledge that he possesses, because I'm like, man, I feel stupid after, you know, after reading the things that he's accomplished with his life. And I'm like, oh yeah. And I have, you know, I went to another country and I started this podcast. Like he's like, that's nothing.
Yeah. I would set up my email on my phone.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, how do I get this podcast up on iTunes?
That's funny.
No, that's amazing. No, but people like him and like Steve Jobs, he was the same way. He had that same approach. And Bill Gates, I mean, just amazing people.
It's great to follow those people and see what they're doing. What do you think happens after we die?
After we die? Well, you know, I hope to find out.
That's a good answer.
Yeah. How do you know? I mean, and so I guess, you know, if we're just going to take a stab at it, I think that, boy, I wasn't expecting that question. That's a good question.
And there's no, obviously right or wrong answer because nobody knows.
No, that's what I was hoping for, actually, was a question that could really challenge me that I couldn't answer right away.
Yeah.
I like those ones. What do I think is going to happen to me when I die? Well, I think my kids are going to keep living. No. I'd love to believe and continue to believe in that there is this afterlife that called heaven that we can go into, and that, you know, like with me, I have a Christian faith that, you know, heaven is, you know, this life where I'll get to see people that I loved and, you know, that, and people that I maybe didn't get to meet on Earth, and that I get to see them up there. And then we can, you know, it's the way I view it is we're never going to stop working. So, you know, if heaven is this place where we're going to continue working, then we get to live in this world of true harmony, you know, where we're all just harmoniously working together and we get to see what we could have had on Earth without this turmoil and pain and disease and misfortune and poverty and you name it, you know?
Yeah.
Get to see what it should have been.
Yeah. That's great. I love that there's that hope, right? The opportunity to at least live toward, like, believe in something after. It's not just the sort of the end.
Just the end.
That's great. Yeah. That's
great. And even to the people, like, you know, there are atheists that I talk to that just feel like, and I shouldn't say just feel, their belief is that we go back into the ground. We are one back with the earth. And that is their thing. And that's where, you know, the earth is this living thing and going back into the earth. And that's their contribution is by dying, they're contributing to the prolonging of earth.
Of earth. Yeah. Interesting. And does your wife hold the same beliefs as you, or is that something you guys?
Oh, yeah. That was one of our, like, we weren't, if we didn't share the same faith, we wouldn't have been married because you can't have that kind of a clash in a relationship.
Yeah.
I guess some people could, but for us, we both, it was an important thing for both of us.
Important thing. That's awesome. What memory makes you the happiest? I know you talked about your daughter earlier, but, and you can answer any or all of these. What memory makes you the happiest? What makes you laugh the hardest? And what makes you the most thankful? You can either answer all of those or one of those.
Yeah.
Just.
Okay. The memory that makes me the happiest, I remember. So, again, I told you I grew up, we were dirt poor. We didn't get the opportunities to you know, go on vacation and, you know, do all those things that a lot of other kids got. However, there was one time that my grandma took me to Disneyland when I was seven. And this was after my mom and her first husband had been divorced. And it was the most amazing feeling. It was the most amazing feeling to us, to me, is just, you know, spending that time at Disneyland with my grandma. And so I set that milestone in my life that I would take my daughters to Disneyland at age seven. Awesome. And so, so that's a tradition now, is I took my 10-year-old, we went to Disneyland 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And then when my daughter that's a year old, when she turns seven, we'll be going to Disneyland again as a family.
That's awesome.
Yeah, most happiest. And then what was the other question?
What was a time maybe you laughed the hardest, or what makes you laugh the hardest?
Well, so, you know, the laughing, so I have a crazy sense of humor, and when I do the Tip Touch podcast, I have a guy on here, his name's Christian. And he's, you know, he's actually the Tip Touch was, it was never a podcast. What it was a conversation we would have at work where we would start our day off with energy drinks or coffee, whatever it was. Like, we would do cold brew and we'd call it Touching Tips, where we'd hit our glasses together, you know, but it's also supposed to, mean other things, right? It's supposed to allude to. And so, you know, that's our thing, but that's the sense of humor. We have this crazy sense of humor, and we would just have we would do stuff at work that would just get every single one of us fired because our stuff we thought was funny, we would take it to the extreme. Anyway, and so just some of the sense of humor that we have is when we're all together and highly caffeinated with copious amounts of coffee and energy drink. We just have the time of our lives. It's that's the funniest thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And what are you most thankful for?
Most thankful for my wife. You know, the fact that I found one person on this 7.5 billion world, you know, that one person could accept me for who I am, all my flaws. I mean, you know, I am still a work in progress. And, you know, even though I've accomplished a lot, there's still so much more that I need to accomplish. And for my wife, for her patience, for her love, for her compassion, you know, I am most grateful for her.
Mm. That's awesome. Is there anything that you would like to say to the listeners or to the people out there, like any particular message or just, if not, that's okay. If you've got some things to plug, you can plug that too.
Well, you know, I think that honestly, like, we're at a time where I love what you're doing with this podcast, because that's exactly, I feel like there's something weird going on where we're all kind of getting burned out from the social media, from the vitriol that exists. And I think we're already, I think the pendulum has swung so far in that direction that it's starting to swing the other way, where, you know, you're going to start seeing more altruistic values and come out of people. Mm. And I think your podcast is perfectly paving the way for that to take place. Mm. And I think that can happen, but that's what I would encourage people to do, is to step outside of your comfort zone. If you see someone, if you see something going wrong, like, you know, do the right thing, take that action, and, you know, and whatever it is, but just do the right thing. And I don't have to tell people what that right thing is, because I think we all know what that right thing is in our hearts. We were all born with a conscience or a conscience. And we all know what right and wrong is. So stick on the right decision, and I think that that is going to make the world a better place and get that pendulum swinging on the other side.
Yeah. And you're really, like you were saying, you're living that sort of stepping outside of your comfort zone. I know for some people, it is a stretch to contact someone through Craigslist and say, hey, can we talk on a podcast, like, and open, be vulnerable and open. And so I appreciate that in you, that you're, you know, took the time to step out, set aside some time from your family to chat with me. Yeah, that's great that you're living that. Living that out. Yeah,
I appreciate the invitation and the offer to be able to talk.
Is there anything else you want to chat about, or are you feeling good, or how are you?
No, I think it was a great conversation, and I really would love to, you know, maybe another time schedule with you for you to come into my territory, you know,
and I would love it.
You actually would fit on either podcast, and I would love to have you on either the Tip Touch or the K1 Experience
and just
get to know you more and let my listeners hear a little bit about you.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love to do that. Where can people catch your podcasts? Do you mind putting those out? I'll put them in the description as well.
Yeah, well, right now, so the Tip Touch, like I said, was kind of my experiment. So right now, I am working on getting a webpage for it and everything. But if you want to check out the K1 Experience, you can go to k1experience.com. And right now it's up on iTunes, and I'm in the process of getting it on Google Play, Stitcher. But right now it's on iTunes. So, again, this is the polarizing. I'm only servicing the Apple crew. Although if you go to k1experience.com, you can go to Libsyn. There is a place where anybody can listen to it.
Oh, great. And then just sign up there.
You don't have to sign up. Just click play.
Just click on the link.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I'm always looking for guests. I mean, I'm always looking for people that have been through the marriage and, you know, the K-1, if they've got the K-1 visa, because, you know, too often we hear about the bad news, and even me, I talk a lot about some of those bad situations that happen, because, you know, I think that people do need to know some of the cautions that are out there, but also I want to be able to tell some of the good stories, and those are a little bit harder to find sometimes.
Mm. Yeah. What episode, what season of 90 Day Fiancé were you on?
We were on season 2 of 90 Day Fiancé, and then we were on season 1 of Happily Ever After. It was a spinoff.
You were on both. Great. I'm going to check them out because I want to see you in action.
Yeah. now that we've had this conversation, you'll see it probably in a different light. But I
know who you are now.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I've got a good sense for the type of person you are. And, Yeah, I really enjoyed chatting with you. It's been a good experience, and I wish you guys all the best as your family grows and ages together. And yeah, I look forward to chatting with you more. And yeah,
same to you and your family. You you've got your hands full with your little girl, and all wishing you and your family all the best as well. And also wishing your podcast a ton of success too. I'm not on social media. I actually got rid of all that, so I don't know if I want to get back into it again. But
Well, I have your number. I don't know if my number came through, but shoot me a text if you ever want to chat or whatever. And we'll see.
I've got
an email too. We can go back and forth. So
no, actually, I prefer the text because it's a lot more direct. Okay. And the email I gave you was my burner account anyway. So that's where that's my precaution for stranger danger.
I realized I should probably set up one of those too.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to have little layers. I did the same thing with my wife on Skype. I started a burner Skype account just because I'm not gonna get burned.
Right.
And I think that's another thing for your listeners: have a burner account ready to go.
It's a pro tip.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, I really appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much for the opportunity to, kind of clear some things up and get to know you and on all that fun stuff.
Yeah, it's awesome. All right, man.
All right. We'll stay in touch.
Have a good night.
You too. All right, thank you.
See you.
Bye.